Thanks, Tom. Thanks for referring to it as an opportunity. Appreciate that. And we have a few visitors here. I'm very welcome. I'm glad to see some new faces here. I hope we're coming through on the webcast. Question to start off with this morning is, why was the New Testament written? Kind of a dumb question. I mean, you'd ask, why? How would we know anything about Jesus Christ if there was no New Testament? And I would agree. But then, on the other hand, Jesus never said anything to his disciples about writing new scriptures. And apparently the idea didn't occur to them to write a New Testament for some time. The three Gospels, the three Synoptic Gospels, for example, weren't written until some 30 years after the crucifixion. And when the Apostle Paul wrote to Timothy and said, from a child you have known the Holy Scriptures, which are able to make you wise unto salvation, that was some 35 years after the crucifixion. And he's saying the Scriptures are able to make you wise to salvation, so why write a new one? Why write a New Testament? Well, we certainly all believe, and I do too, that God inspired each and every book of the New Testament. They are filled and packed with information, vital information. But I think if you could have been back then in the first century and asked those writers why they wrote the letter or why they are writing this letter that they are writing, that they would have told you that they were trying to counter some misunderstanding in the church. A heresy, a misunderstanding, a false gospel, something that was being taught that was wrong. So I've been approaching this theme for quite a long time. Chronologically, that is the fight against heresy, in the order of the composition of the books. And so far I've only talked about the epistles, some of the epistles of Paul, because so far, chronologically, that's all that's been written. I mean, he wrote first. With the exception of the letter by James, perhaps, the first New Testament letters were those of the Thessalonians, and then to the Corinthians, and then to the Galatians, and then to Romans. But today, I would like to introduce the next set, chronologically, in that theme. Well, chronologically of the whole New Testament, but focusing on the theme of that combat against heresy, which are the prison epistles, Paul's prison epistles. I'd like to lay at least, I only have a few minutes today, so just lay the foundation, the context for how Paul deals with heresy, that is the context of the prison epistles, and how he deals with heresy in those epistles. So the first of my three sections today is just a review of the development of the New Testament up until that imprisonment, Paul's imprisonment in Rome. There were three journeys that Paul took. If you recall, the first journey was when he established the four churches of Galatia. And then he came back, and then there was the conference at Jerusalem, which was in about 49 A.D. No scriptures came out of that. No scriptures were written by Paul yet. Then on his second journey, Paul revisits the churches of Galatia, and then for the first time, he crosses over to Europe, into Greece, founds the churches in Macedonia, and the one in Corinth. And then from Corinth, in about the year 51, he writes the first epistles, 1st and 2nd Thessalonians. There doesn't seem to be much heresy being taught in the church at this point, although in 2nd Thessalonians, Paul does refer to an undescribed mystery of iniquity that's beginning to work. Maybe a clue that some of the heresy had started way back then. And from Corinth, he returns to Antioch, and that's the end of his second trip. The third trip is about 54. He again revisits the churches of Galatia, and then for the first time, he goes to Ephesus. Spends 2 years in Ephesus. And there in Ephesus, he hears of the divisions and the problems in Corinth. And he writes the letters to the Corinthians. Then he travels to Corinth itself, spends several months there, and apparently writes the letters to Galatia, and then the longer letter to Romans. So by the end of 57 AD, we have, I think, seven letters that have gone into that will go into the New Testament, those being James, Thessalonians, Corinthians, Galatians, and Romans. The end of his third trip, then, he leaves Corinth and he sails for Jerusalem, but he sails by way of Ephesus again. He stops there and he calls, if you recall, the elders of Ephesus together, and he says something significant to them, I think, in Acts chapter 20. I'll just cite a couple of verses, 20, 29 through 30. He says to the elders at Ephesus, "I know this, that after my departing shall grievous wolves enter in among you, not sparing the flock. Also of your own selves," he's talking to the elders of the church here, "shall men arise, speaking perverse things to draw away disciples after themselves." I think the context here is significant. He has just seen this happen in Galatia and in Corinth. And now he is sure it will happen here in Asia, the province of Asia as well. And in the next 7 years, it did happen. You know, by the year 65, 7 years or so from then, he writes to Timothy in 2 Timothy 1, "This you know, that all they which are in Asia be turned away from me." And these prison epistles then, which I want to come to today then, these prison epistles tell us how this begins to happen in the province of Asia and how Paul responds to it. That's what I just want to kind of framework today. So that's the end of the third trip. He leaves Miletus and goes to Jerusalem where he's accused by the Jews. He's imprisoned in Caesarea for a couple of years, and then he takes that long and dangerous voyage to Rome. Which brings us then to the imprisonment in Rome. So my second point, number two here, is the events of the Roman imprisonment. The book of Acts ends in Acts 28, verse 30, saying, "And Paul dwelt 2 whole years in his own hired house and received all that came to him." So we know that this imprisonment was not in a dungeon. He had his own house. But that is also the end of the book. All we know then about this other circumstances of his imprisonment in Rome are what he writes in these letters. So here are some of the things that we know from about those couple of years in Rome. From Ephesians 6, it says, "I am an ambassador in bonds." He is in bonds of some sort. And to the Philippians, he writes, "My bonds in Christ are manifest in all the palace." And the word, he doesn't live in the palace, but the word palace there is praetorian. Apparently, Paul is in his own house, but he's chained every day to a praetorian guard. So while he's writing these letters, he's probably clanking the chain that's attached to him. So that's point A. 2A, he was probably chained to a praetorian guard. B, the church at Philippi, we know, learned of Paul's imprisonment and set up made up a contribution and sent it to Paul, money, to support him, sent it by Epaphroditus, one of the elders of Philippi. And so I think Philippians, the letter to the Philippians is written first as a thanks to the congregation for their aid and encouragement for their faithfulness. C, and probably pivotal in this time, is that the elder Epaphras comes to Rome from Colossae. He's an elder in Colossae. It says in Colossians 1:7, speaking of Epaphras, he says, "You also learned of Epaphras, our dear fellow servant, who is for you a faithful minister of Christ." He's an elder there. And in chapter 4, he says, "Epaphras, who is one of you, a servant of Christ, salutes you." So Epaphras is there in Rome when Paul writes to the Colossians. Epaphras apparently has come to Rome to ask for Paul's help against a serious problem, and this is pivotal. There was a heresy in Colossae, and Epaphras has come to ask for help. It's against this heresy that Paul writes the epistle of the Colossians and the Ephesians, and I think Hebrews, and also a solemn warning to the congregation at Philippi, all because of this problem that has been brought to him from Colossae. D, there's also a runaway slave. Philemon is another elder in Colossae, and his slave, Onesimus, has run away probably at the same time that Epaphras comes to Rome. He decides to go to Rome for some reason to seek maybe Paul's aid and becoming free or something. But Onesimus is there also in Rome when Paul writes Colossians. And the letter to Philemon is then delivered to Asia with the letter to the Colossians. And E, there are several others. There are several other people there with Paul. He mentions them in these letters. They include Luke and Timothy and Mark and Tychicus and others. And I think we can see that Timothy is eventually in custody for a while in Rome as well, because at the end of Hebrews, Paul's writing from somewhere near Rome in Italy, and he says in Hebrews 13:23 in this letter, "Know you that our brother Timothy is set at liberty, with whom, if he comes shortly to wherever Paul was when he was writing this letter, I will see you. Salute all them that have the rule over you and all the saints," to the churches that he's writing to, "all they of Italy salute you." So he's writing from Italy, I think just at the end of this prison time, when he's out of prison, but Timothy is just newly out of custody for some reason. And so I think there are five letters written at probably the second year of Paul's imprisonment in Rome, because there has to be time for all these things to occur. Between the time he's imprisoned in 61 until all these things occur and then he writes these letters, it has to be at least 62 or 63. Third point then, lastly here, how do the four main letters relate to the heresy that's come up in the province of Asia? Philippians is first, I said. Paul writes to the Philippians first, but I don't see any evidence in that letter that there was actually any any heretics in Philippi. But still, there is a stern warning introduced right in the middle of that letter. Philippians chapter 3 and verse 2. Paul writes, "Beware of dogs, beware of evil workers, beware of the concision." This is a blunt, it's a startlingly blunt thing to interject into a letter that's so otherwise positive. He's denouncing here some heretics that he's heard of in the strongest possible language. I can't think of another adjective that could be more strong against them for that day than to call them dogs. He says in Philippians 3:18 through 19, "For many walk, of whom I have told you often and now tell you, even weeping, that they are the enemies of the cross of Christ." There is a heresy against the idea of the death of Christ on the cross. "Whose end is destruction, whose God is their belly, and whose glory is their shame." Their conduct is very bad. "Who mind earthly things." My guess is that Paul was writing the letter, this is just a guess, that Paul was writing to the letter to the Philippians when Epaphras arrived, telling them about the heresy that had come up in Colossae. And so Paul writes this stern warning to the Philippians to watch out for the same thing. Colossians. Then he writes the letter to the Colossians. In it are a lot of important things that tell us that there were indeed heretics in the church in Colossae. No question about that. Some examples are from Colossians chapter 2. Just cite a few verses here. Colossians 2, verse 3 through 4, breaking in, he says, "In whom," that is, in Christ, "are hid all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. And this I say," that Christ embodies all these things, "lest any man should beguile you with enticing words." Because there were those there enticing with beguiling words. Verse 8 says, "Beware lest any man spoil you through philosophy and vain deceit." What he calls this heresy. Verse 16 says, "Let no man therefore judge you." There were people there criticizing the church. And verse 18 says, "Let no man beguile you of your reward in a voluntary humility and worshiping of angels. That is particularly telling about the heresy in Colossae. The heresy in Colossae has long been known and widely known to have been Gnosticism. It is, in my opinion, the very same Jewish-born, it is carried by Jews, not Judaistic Jews, but ethnic Jews, a Jewish-born philosophy that had been the trouble in Corinth, had been the trouble in Galatia, and it is the belief system which Paul will battle in Asia through the rest of his life, and which the succeeding apostles will battle in the rest of the New Testament. Ephesians, then, follows Colossians. Ephesians is a longer and more deliberate expounding of the gospel in the face of this heresy, I think, is the motivation for writing it. Tychicus delivers Colossians and Ephesians and Philemon all at the same time to Asia. It sort of reminds me of the relationship of Galatians to Romans. Galatians is fired off in the face of the problem in the church. And then he writes the longer letter, knocking the legs out from under the philosophy in Romans. Well, now he fires off the letter to Colossae in the face of the problem, and then he writes a longer exposition of the gospel, which is the letter to the Ephesians. Some examples from Ephesians chapter 4. 4:13, breaking in, till we all come in the unity of the faith and of the knowledge. That word, by the way, is epignosis, the true knowledge, not the Gnostic knowledge, but the epignosis of the Son of God, under the perfect man, and for the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. That henceforth we be no more children, tossed to and fro, carried about with every wind of doctrine, which is happening in Asia, by the sleight of men and cunning craftiness whereby they lie in wait to deceive. And then in chapter 5, verses 6 and 11, let no man deceive you with vain words. I mean, the motive for this letter is the same. For because of these things comes the wrath of God upon the children of disobedience, and have no fellowship, verse 11, with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. So those are four of the prison epistles. Lastly, Hebrews. Hebrews is not usually counted as a prison epistle of Paul's. In fact, if you read the scholars who are of a literary criticism or literary analysis bent, they will tell you quite surely, that is, quite confidently, that Paul did not write the book of Hebrews. But I am convinced by the hard evidence, and the hard evidence is the internal evidence of what the letter says and what those who has written, historically, those to whom it was written knew about it, that it was indeed written by Paul. And not only was it written by Paul, but it was written at the time near the end of his imprisonment in Rome. It is one of the prison epistles. That it was addressed not to Jewish Christians in Jerusalem, not at all. It was written to the Jewish Christians of Asia, in Paul's churches. Particularly for two reasons is this, to me, obviously written to Paul's churches. One is that there's a clarification there of the status of Christ versus the angels. And second, there's a clarification there of Christ's fulfillment of the tabernacle and its rituals. And those two topics are primary issues of the Gnostic heresy that Hebrews is addressed against. So Hebrews is another lengthy exposition which knocks the legs out from under the Gnostic heresy, or, as I call it before, the spiritualist ritualist heresy. They didn't call themselves Gnostics, but they were spiritualists and believed in rituals. The heresy that was taking root in Asia. So I think there were five prison epistles: Philippians, Colossians, Philemon, Ephesians, and Hebrews. Philemon, a stern warning about a heresy that is happening elsewhere, and then direct combat with that heresy by writing Colossians, Ephesians, and Hebrews. I plan to do a more detailed scan of those four epistles after the feast in October. looking to say what looking at what Paul has to say about the nature of that heresy there in those letters. And probably more importantly, which is the whole object here, importantly, is how Paul's arguments are shaped and explained by that conflict.